Blow the horn, go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make his ass quit! That's our framework! That's our MO with the team!
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, I've never experienced a college football game that felt so much like a heavyweight prize fight. Kiss it and make it feel better.
There's no way to make this feel better, man. This sucks. We haven't experienced a loss in a while, and we talked in the preview show last week about, you know, what we thought was going to unfold, and I kind of thought that we would be able to stop their run and, you know, stop the power eye and really eliminate the play-action pass, and I really thought we were going to put Jarrett Lee in uncomfortable situations, and, you know, he was going to throw a couple picks. Well,
wait a second. Didn't all that happen?
Man, if you had not watched the game and you just looked at the box score, you'd be shocked at the outcome. I mean, I really think that the biggest thing is that we came out, we forced them to be one-dimensional. We forced them to put the game in Jarrett Lee's hands, and he was not able to deliver. But yet, you can't have three missed field goals to start the game. I mean, I really think the key to this ball game is, you know, we were sitting there at the half. We had missed three field goals. Granted, one was blocked, and we can get into that in a minute. But we had missed three field goals. They had done nothing offensively at all except one broken pass play that puts them in a position to kick a field goal right there at the half, and it's tied up. And so I'm like, okay, you know, we're great at making adjustments. We're, you know, things are still going to be okay. And we come out to start the second half. The defense plays lights out. They get us the ball back a couple times, and we just still couldn't cash in. And I just mentioned that real quick because I really think that if we could have had a couple scores in that first half and really just made them pass to catch up, I really think we could have blown that game wide open.
Well, Tom, it's bizarro stats, right? Because, you know, you talk about the sort of the busted pass coverage that allows them to move down, you know, to kick that field goal just before half. They had five plays before they kicked that field goal. You know, they had five plays inside the 10, and we held them to a field goal. The fact that they kicked the field goal was a victory for the defense. And then, you know, you go back and you look at the stats and you say, well, Alabama's first punt doesn't happen until the third quarter. Wow, they must have really been moving the ball. Well, yeah, we were moving the ball, you know, between our 4-yard line and their 30-yard line. And, you know, I read the fact that our first punt was in the third quarter, and I actually get frustrated because two of the kicks should have been punts. Two of the field goal attempts should have been punts. Very, very frustrating. Why don't you jump us into offense and we'll just step through our observations on that side of the ball?
Sure. I mean, you know, like we were talking about there, what was so frustrating on the offensive side of the ball, especially early on, is, you know, we had a lot of explosive plays. One stat that also was a bizarro stat is we ended up finishing the game with 13 plays of over 10 yards, whereas they only had four plays in the game of over 10 yards. And so, you know, both in the passing game and in the running game, you know, we were able to have big plays. And early on, they even helped us out with some face mask penalties that kind of, you know, threw 15 yards, you know, at the end of a play a couple times. But when I went back and looked at the stats and, you know, Phil Savage kind of talked about it during the game, you know, like you say, we got there around the, you know, in the 20 to 30 yard range. And I almost think we got too cutesy. I mean, when you go back and look at it, you know, we had success running to the left early. We got Trent involved. We get down there. We have a loss of 5 yards. It's first and 15. The next time we get down there in the first quarter, we have a stupid substitution penalty. It's first and 15. The next time we get down there, you know, we're first and 10 at like the 28. We do some little cutesy reverse to Marquise Mays. We lose 6 yards. I mean, it's like we get down into position to really do something. And first and 10 turns out to first and 15. It was just frustrating.
Well, the little end-around attempt to Mays, I think would have gone for, you know, nice yardage had Trent not tackled him.
No, that's true. And like the substitution, I mean, we had two of those in the ball game. You know, very uncharacteristic of Alabama. We normally win the penalty battle, and, you know, we had more penalty yards than they did. And once again, I can't emphasize enough that I thought the key to this game, the reason I had a 27-10 score, is I thought, you know, we talk about Coach Saban taking away what they do best. Well, we talked about it for 40 minutes last week. What they do best is power eye, their 288-pound fullback, and we're just going to run it down your throat, and we're going to play action pass. Well, guess what? One of the first times they sent that 288-pound fullback into the hole, Dante Hightower knocked his ass back 3 yards on his butt. And so very quickly, Les Miles was like, oh, shit, we're not going to be able to do what I thought we were going to be able to do. But by us not being able to put them away early and force them into a passing game, I really think the key there was that he was able to really make the adjustments in the second half and go to Jefferson and go to this option game. And, you know, you and I both know that we just can't play very well against running quarterbacks.
Well, let's stick to the offense. Tell me about McCarron. He looked good in spots. He was 16 of 28, had a 199 yardage. Played with a lot of poise the couple of times we were inside the five. I mean, we started a couple drives well inside our side of the field.
And he made big passes in those situations.
Big passes in those situations. Both times we were, you know, first and four, first and five. You know, we ran into the center of the line of scrimmage, you know, to try to get an extra yard or two to give some room to operate. I'm not sure I agree with that play call, but we did it in both of those situations, which really gave, you know, put us behind the chains on second down. You know, McCarron showed a lot of poise in those instances, but there were other times in the game where he just seemed to clinch and just really didn't play to the level that what we thought he was evolving into. I just didn't see that next step today.
No, and he played like a sophomore, or at least part of the game he played like a sophomore. But you know what? Unfortunately, McElroy had some hiccups along the way in 2009, and we were able to overcome them and, you know, some subpar performances. And AJ probably gets a, you know, he probably gets a B minus from me today. I mean, the biggest thing for me, though, that I thought was key for us on offense is we talked in the preview show about they've only got 2 guys who had caught over 10 passes all year, and we had 10 guys who had caught 10 passes. And so I said, okay, if you stack the box against Trent, we've just got all these different weapons. Well, you know what? What's really damn frustrating is we really were not able to get anybody else involved besides Mays and Hanks and Trent Richardson. Now, I will say that crossing pattern that's been very successful all year, you know, we had huge success in that crossing pattern with Mays and Hanks. But, you know, going back to McCarron for a second, I think the biggest things that he did that was just so frustrating for me, but, you know, it's what you're going to get with a sophomore sometimes, is in the third quarter, which I think was really the key quarter in this ball game, you know, both teams are coming out after adjustments. We shut them down. They're giving us Jefferson. We're shutting him down after Jarrett Lee had thrown his pick. And AJ, we're driving again. You know, he's got their best cornerback, Claiborne, matched up against Smelly. And he's on the left hash. And he tries to throw a 20-yard out pattern to Smelly on the sideline. And he just puts too much air under the ball. And I'm sitting here thinking, why in the hell are you going to the tight end against their best cornerback out in the flats on a pattern like that? The next thing you know, Claiborne intercepts the ball. He returns it to the 5-yard line. And then the other one was when he took that sack late in the game. I mean, he's done a really good job of, you know, of not putting his team in negative down and yardage situations, but he wasn't able to do it tonight.
And I had a couple plays down specifically that McCarron made or didn't make that I wanted to call out. And you just mentioned, you know, 2 of the 3. The pass to Morris Claiborne, you know, it was a little bit of game within the game baiting McCarron on that. You know, he knew that he was covering a tight end, so it wasn't a dynamic receiving threat, not someone that's going to break the other way or, you know, become uncoverable. And with his skill, Morris Claiborne's skill, he was able to close that gap. You know, they went on to kick a field goal, what ended up being the tying field goal to make it a 6-6 ball game. That was a critical turnover. When he took the sack, I mean, I kind of get the thinking there. Sometimes you want to throw the ball away. That's the right decision. Sometimes taking the sack is the right decision, so you don't put the ball in jeopardy. And I think that the mentality was, I'm going to take the sack here. We'll have the ball, live to play the next play. Unfortunately, the next play was a 52-yard field goal.
Right.
You know, at that point, you think, our only option here is to try to kick it, and don't feel really good about being sort of the last bullet in the gun.
And you can't do that. And it's easy for us to say, right, because we're armchair quarterbacks. But given the three missed field goals earlier in the ball game, all less distances than the 52-yarder, man, you got to be thinking, I got to make a play here. I got to either throw it away so it's a 46-yarder, or I've got to try to get 4 or 5 yards. And I guess that goes back to the play calling for a quick minute, because I thought there were flashes of really good play calls. But when we got momentum and we'd get around that 30-yard line, because I don't even want to call it the red zone, because we got in the red zone twice, but we got inside the 30, I think, 6 or 7 times.
Right.
When we got to that 30-yard line, the play calling just got too cutesy. But something else that I think is key about this is, even though we had so many explosive plays in the ball game, I mean, if you've got 13 plays over 10 yards and your opponent only has 4, man, once again, back to the bizarro stats, you would think you'd kick the shit out of them. Well, what was so key for Alabama in this ball game is they've always done a good job of making it a manageable down and distance. Out of 27 first down play calls, they proceed to have 17 second down and long and 11 third down and long. And so we only had 2 second and short, and we only had 1 third and short. So I wanted to point out that we had 28 of our 60 plays in the ball game where we were second and long or third and long. And I just think that obviously AJ wasn't comfortable with that.
We overcame that, you know, more times than not, but that's just something you can't sustain. That's not sustainable through the course of a ball game. And certainly playing a defense like LSU, look, I want to give them some credit too. You know, it's sort of true that teams do have a harder time inside the 20 because it's a compressed field. There's more bodies in that space and there's less space for the defense to cover. You know, with a team like LSU, as good as they are, being at the 30 is the equivalent of being at the 20 for another team, because they're that good that a compressed field at the 30, you know, the field really starts to become compressed, you know, even 10 yards farther out. And so I want to give them some credit. You know, they're a spectacular team. You know, their defense played very well. I want to hear your take on McCarron's fade to Hanks.
Well, my take on that is I think he really missed the call, and he kind of felt that there was a progression of receivers that he could go to. And at least that's the way that Coach Saban kind of made it appear in being able to, from our vantage point. I mean, he was jumping up and down about 2 or 3 feet off the ground, and he was pointing down to Gibson and literally was just screaming his head off at AJ as he was coming off the sideline, and AJ didn't even walk anywhere near him.
There was something the way that play lined up. I think McCarron had really made up his mind at the line of scrimmage that he was going to the right side of the field, to Hanks, you know, on that fade, because he did not even look the other way. And had he looked the other way, you know, he would have paused, turned, you know, rotated and thrown the ball, because, you know, no one was covering, you know, Gibson. I don't know kind of what happened on that side of the field, but that was blown coverage to be sure. I just think he had so made up his mind that he was going to Hanks, because he took the snap, took a 3-step drop, and that ball was in the air, you know, 1001, 1002, that ball's in the air. So he didn't even look. He didn't even have the time to look, and he had the ball up in the air. So I don't know what it was, a certain kind of coverage. And it's reasonable to think that you drill into them all week. If you see this kind of coverage, if you see this man on this man at this down and distance, that's where you go with a ball. And you don't anticipate in that situation, they're just not going to cover the receiver.
No, but it does make you wonder. We've enjoyed the fact that he seems to be doing more checks at the line of scrimmage, and, you know, that they're giving him more freedoms as he's evolving in the offense. And that might just be an example where he missed the read, or at least Saban, you know, thinks that he read wrong what he was looking at. I've got another play on offense that I wanted to kind of ask you about, and it goes back to that third quarter, or really third quarter into the beginning of the fourth quarter. We came out, we stopped them, you know, we had the momentum. Hell, their fabulous punter, well, actually, you know, to kind of set this up for those that didn't get to watch the game, I mean, we come out at half, it's tied up. They start with Jordan Jefferson. They start trying to do the mobile quarterback thing. We actually shut it down. Their star punter, you know, shanks a 20-something yard punt to the 50-yard line. And we proceed to do nothing with this. They get the ball back. We get the second pick from Jarrett Lee. And then now we're getting some momentum. Trent has a fabulous run, just a real big effort run. We get down to the 28-yard line. And I'm like, okay, let's just keep punishing them here. Let's just, they're on their heels. And we do that damn pass to Mays, that controversial play to Michael Williams. I mean, that just another example of we got down to their 30, which, like you said, is most teams' 20s, and we just got damn cute. Why couldn't we just be just in your face, just go after you right there? We had them reeling. I just think that was the wrong play call at that time.
I think a couple things there. I think that, you know, they had a player down on the long run that Trent had. They had a defensive lineman that was down. And so we kind of huddled on the sideline, you know, for a little bit. He left the field. I think if it had been a boom, boom, the long run had happened, and let's get up to the line of scrimmage, you know, one of two things is going to happen. Either we're not going to have time to think to be cute, or we're going to execute the play sort of in the flow, in the momentum, and that further catches them off balance. Everyone's had a chance to now, you know, kind of catch their breath, get their wits back about them, to come out with trick play in that situation, I don't think is the best timing to do it. But I do think it was a good call. I just think the execution was poor. And the execution was poor, I'm going to say, in two different ways. Clearly, you know, Michael Williams could have fought for that ball a little bit. And, you know, you can talk to, you know, two rational people, and they're going to have two different opinions on that play.
Now, I sort of say, as far as who came down with it, but just to touch on that for a second, don't you think Colin Peake comes down with that damn ball? I mean, I'm sorry, well, you're a big-ass tight end, and you can't outfight the safety for the ball? Really?
Yeah. You know, he's got the guy, you know, 80 pounds on him, and so you think that, you know, if he just kind of wrestles it, you know, holds possession, then, you know, then that's the right answer. I do think, though, that, you know, Fluker kind of got beat, and Mays had to throw the ball early, but he had to throw it kind of jumping back and off his back foot. If he could have, you know, taken a stride into the throw, Michael Williams had beaten the man. And if he could have caught it out ahead of him and, you know, ran under the ball, that would have been an easy touchdown, would have looked genius. But Mays had to hold up and had to rush the throw and throw it falling back. And that took about a yard off the ball. I think that was critical to that play as well.
I do think it was critical. And even though I don't agree with the play call, I think one other thing that's important to point out is that the safety there that made the play, Eric Reed, the sophomore, let's just say that Fluker, and so to your two points there, I think the throwing off your back foot was the bigger one.
Yes.
Because Eric Reed was covering Hanks dragging across the middle. And to his credit, good play, Eric Reed, he sees Michael Williams go into the end zone with nobody covering him. And so he goes to Michael Williams. So to your point about if Mays had more time, because he was a former quarterback, Eric Reed would have been in no man's land, and he would have been kind of not covering either one of them.
That would have been an easy walk-in touchdown.
He even had two receivers he could have gone to there. And so it is pretty frustrating. But it just, I just think that we just got too cutesy as we got down with momentum every time we got down the field. And so the reason that that's just so important is because suddenly if we score a couple times in the first half and coming out of the second half, it's 14-3. Well, guess what? You can't do all that damn option shit with Jordan Jefferson because you're eating too much clock. But because he's just not a great passing quarterback. If you're going to let him just make 10 passing attempts, okay, he's going to complete 5 or 6. But Jordan Jefferson or Jarrett Lee, if you would have made one of them throw 20 passing attempts, that's a whole different ball game. But by you letting them stay in the game, which sounds funny as the number one team in the country, but by you letting them stay in the game, Les Miles was able to just be content playing field position with Jordan Jefferson at quarterback, and he's going to get 6 yards here and 5 yards there, etc. It just played into their hands. I mean, That second half, that just was exactly what Les Miles wanted.
What do you think about the last minute and a half? We stopped them on third down. They're going to have to punt. There's about a minute and a half left on the clock. We've got two timeouts. We don't call them. They punt. We finally get the ball on our 20 with 52 seconds left. So we've burned just over half a minute just in that transaction. You know, like I said, could have called a timeout and had most of those minutes. And then with 52 seconds left, still having the two timeouts, we just seem very content to let the clock run out and go to overtime. What's your thought there about us not taking a strike down the field?
We had tried to take two shots earlier in the game, a post pattern to Kenny Bell and a post pattern to Hanks, and neither one of those had connected. I really think after the two picks that AJ had thrown and the way that he had not shown that he could protect the football, as bad as his kicking game had been, I think that Saban was like, I just need to get this to overtime. I really think he said that I can't take a chance of AJ throwing a pick six here. I just got to get to overtime.
You know, that's what I think too. I just don't like that. I don't like that settling. If it's going to go to overtime, then let's get two possessions to their one that they're going to get in overtime. Let's at least, you know, make an opportunity for it. I just wasn't pleased with that. You know, we were playing to try to win it in overtime as opposed to trying to win it in regulation. I just didn't care for that. I just didn't care for that so much.
No, I agree. Anything else on offense, or do we want to flip the field to defense?
Nah, let's talk defense.
You know, I think the defense played a pretty damn good game. You know, if you really go back and look at things, you know, LSU really couldn't do much with the ball at all. And, you know, even whenever they had that big pick from their cornerback and he returned it to the 15, they get 2 yards from there and have to kick a field goal. And then, like you said, in the first half, you know, they had all those opportunities deep in our territory and couldn't do anything with the ball. We did what we wanted. I mean, We got Jarrett Lee to throw the picks. You know, I guess the only thing that jumps out at me defensively is because the offense couldn't carry its weight, it exposed us against that damn running quarterback.
Well, you know, we really shut down Reuben Randall. He had 2 catches for 19 yards, which I'm just amazed that we held him. You know, I was giving him $1.20 to start the game, and, you know, he had 2 catches for 19. And so we succeeded in taking him away.
We took all their receivers away, with the exception of that one broken pass. We took all of them. I mean, we talked about them only having 2 receivers with over 10 catches for the year. Well, they only had 3 receivers that each had 2 catches. I mean,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, we did the things that we wanted to do. The only area, if, you know, you want to say that we struggled, is with the option game. And so we wanted Jordan Jefferson, you know, probably in the game. We suspected, you know, in our pregame show, we talked about him being the quarterback that's more apt to play. And it just happened to be that versatility, his zone read or his option game that, you know, that really impacted us.
Well, but once again, if it's not 6-3 in the third quarter and it's not 6-6 in the fourth quarter, if it's a 16-3 ball game, Jordan Jefferson starts to clinch also.
Well, yeah, then he's forced to pass, and, you know, you think that maybe he becomes one-dimensional. And, you know, both defenses kept, you know, look at it, you know, their defense is the pride of their team and our defense is the pride of ours. You know, I'd like to think that our offense is a little bit better than theirs, but it's not offense against offense. It's offense against, you know, defense. And so, you know, both defenses stifled the offenses such that both teams were in the game. And, you know, a touchdown is a deadly weapon. You know, it's like a Rambo movie where there's bazookas and tanks and helicopters and guns and grenades and all that. And a little two-shot Derringer is a nothing. But you go to like a spy, you know, mystery movie and a Derringer is the lethal weapon of the show. A touchdown would have been the ultimate trump card in this game. And, you know, no one was able to score one.
That's why some of those missed opportunities, you know, like we talked about on the offense earlier, was just so key. What did you think about, obviously, the big play that I think we need to touch on with one of the interceptions that Mark Barron made, you know, where he returned the ball to inside their 5, you know, damn, that play by Josh Chapman. I mean, I appreciate him coming out and taking ownership and, you know, talking about, you know, you're taught if you can read the guy's numbers on his back of his jersey, leave him alone. But man, that was a costly ass penalty. We go from having the ball at the 4-yard line to having it at the 35-yard line.
Well, and I'll even kind of split the difference. You know, if he had not blocked the guy in the back, let's say that guy makes the tackle at the 10. You know what? I'll take that. I'll take the ball at the 10 because, hell, we can make that field goal.
Right. It was just another example of just things kind of, you know, kind of working against us. But, you know, as we're talking about the defense, you know, when you look at the stat sheet, I mean, they really, LSU just really wasn't able to do much with the ball. And I guess the other thing, and we can talk about this with special teams in a moment, but I think it's okay and appropriate to bring it up right now. You know, I do think Saban was outcoached a little bit from his choosing to attempt all of those field goals early, because, you know, even with that third field goal that he attempted that got blocked, and Reed, you know, returns it 30 yards that flips the field again. I mean, Cody Mandel only punted twice, but both times he punted, he pinned them inside their 20-yard line. And I just really wish we could have helped out that defense with the offense struggling. I just wish he could have allowed the punter to punt his lousy 35-yard punt and just make them have a longer field a couple more times.
Yeah, I'll give you the first missed field goal because you want to crack the scoreboard first. Yes, and it's early. Right. I'll even almost give you, you know, the second one in hindsight, you know, I wish we had punted that one. But I'll give you that one because, you know, hey, I've got a strong leg kicker. We're going to get down here. We're going to make this one because he missed the first one. The third one, when you said, I'd give up, I'm going to put my short kicker in to kick
the hell
49 yards. That was a poor, poor decision. At that point, you bring in your short leg kicker, you punt the ball.
And now you've shot the confidence of Cade Foster because you've brought in Shelley. And as you and I both know, and most of the listeners know, you got a short kicker, you know, or a guy who doesn't have that kind of leg, he's going to keep the ball down low because he's going to try to kick a line drive because that's his only chance in hell of making it. Well, if you're kicking a line drive, it's a lot easier to get blocked. But I thought Saban really made a poor decision.
Yeah, and when you say shot, you know, confident shot, I completely agree with that because it's one thing for the coach to go put his arm around Cade and say, hey, keep your head in the game. We're going to need you to win this late. When you're making a strategic decision to punt the ball, but you can't go and put your arm around him and say, I'm going to need you late when you're sitting him down and letting someone else try to kick the field goal. You know, you're doing two things that have very different impacts on the psyche of the kicker.
No, I agree. And then once again, this guy who you're messing with his psyche, oh, now I need you to kick a 52-yarder in overtime to keep the game going.
Hey, I want to talk just a little bit, you know, schematics on defense. I was very surprised at the amount of base defense we played. We were in our base personnel, base 3-4, nearly all night. Jarrell played, and I'm not necessarily picking on Jarrell because I thought, you know, in spots he played very well. He's just sort of the guy that's not in there. When we go to nickel and dime, he rotates out, and he just was on the field just quite a lot. And it really goes back to the notion that we brought up in the pregame. Man, if we're going to play a lot of base, that keeps CJ off field. And so why don't we play base with Mosley in that position just to get his talent on the field?
No, and you're right. And the other thing that I think is interesting about that is we struggle against a running quarterback or a quarterback that when the pocket breaks down, even take away their option, he only had one big scramble for 18 yards. But man, how nice would it have been to have CJ Mosley, hell, move Nico Johnson to where Jarrell is and put CJ back in his comfortable spot in the middle of that defense when Jordan Jefferson was brought in. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is when they kind of abandoned the Jarrett Lee bus and they said, he's done today, we're going to go all Jordan Jefferson. I wish we would have countered by saying, okay, we're going all CJ Mosley now in our base, because I would have much rather had CJ Mosley spy Jordan Jefferson. And I think we would have eliminated some of the problems with both the option game and the scrambling quarterback.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, in the pregame when we said, you know, why don't we put Mosley in for Jarrell? I don't think that's a bad idea. What we didn't talk about was where there's so many sub packages on defense where we play CJ, so that, you know, when we're going to play base, we're as much playing base as we are giving CJ a break. But when we're going to play base all night, then forget all the subtle sub packages. CJ needs to see the field. And as well as the defense played, we left one of our better linebackers on the bench most of the night.
We did, and that would have been a good adjustment. And that would have been an unexpected adjustment, something we had not done all year. And that might be where our defense was outcoached from that one schematic, because I do think CJ could have really helped to neutralize Jefferson.
All right, let's move to special teams, man. I think we've exhausted our frustration over field goals, but I've got a couple other topics I want to hit. You want to pick up one?
No, go ahead. Jump in first.
What about Mays not filling that punt?
Well, I love the fact that CBS, they felt like they could go back and look at the footage to confirm Mays saying that the ball actually interfered with the camera.
Yeah, he thought it hit the wires.
I mean, that's, you know, Mays had been hurt earlier with his ankle, and I really think he just couldn't get to the ball. He just didn't have the speed to get to the ball, and that was such a huge play. I mean, as much as we talk about these field goals early in the game, I mean, damn, one of the few times we let our punter punt, you know, or I beg your pardon, that was actually after the interception that we sit there and hold them, and they've got a punt, and then they punt a 72-yard freaking punt and flip the field?
They intercepted that ball, the ball that they took from Michael Williams on the one. And so, you know, they were happy to have the ball, but that's the worst place on the field to have it. And, you know, we hold them to, you know, a three and out. They maybe get a first down, but we definitely hold them, you know, deep in our side of the field. And then, you know, to have a 73-yard punt, they flipped the field just like, you know, hitting a light switch.
No, they did. And I think back to your question about Mays, I just think his ankle, what was really weird about that is I think his ankle affected him to be able to backpedal and make those cuts and try to go field that ball, because it bounced at the 40. Mm-hmm. And you and I talked about it. Had anybody out there been able to field that at the 40, I think you easily probably can return it 5, 6, 7 yards, and now you're at midfield.
You know, you don't even have to return it. Just catch the damn ball at the 40.
Just fair catch it. Well, what was so bizarre about that is he then comes in, if you recall, he doesn't come back out with the offense to start that series, but he comes in on a key third down play where he gets us a first down, and he's making all these cuts with his ankle, and I'm like, well, damn. And then the next time LSU gets pinned in and we punt, he tells the coach he can't go. So it was really weird.
It was really weird. I completely agree with that. Christian Jones went in and fielded a couple of punts. He must have been ice cold when he came in to fill those punts, because he didn't get a lot of play on offense and probably wasn't expecting to get a whole lot of play, you know, in the kicking game. And, you know, we're real protective of who we put back there to fill kicks. And so for him to come off the bench, to come off cold and make some really fine grabs, I was really pleased with that, because, you know, that's where you could get into a turnover situation, and he did not allow that to happen. So I was pleased to see that.
No, he did. He played well. I was surprised. You know, LSU does a really good job with their punt coverage, and there was one time he had a difficult fair catch where he had three LSU guys that were kind of surrounding him and very close proximity, and he was able to make the catch. You had mentioned a couple things on special teams. I think I've kind of exhausted all of my frustration. Do you have something else you want to add on special teams?
You know what? I just want to give, you know, special hats off to LSU's punter, Brad Wing. You know, we've seen good punters before. You know, we've had good punters before. I have never seen a punter be used as a weapon and have quite the skill set that Brad Wing has. Some NFL analysts talk about arm talent that some quarterbacks have, that they can throw from different angles and different platforms, and they can adjust touch based on the type of throw and type of duress that they're trying to avoid. Brad Wing has leg talent. And, you know, watching him during halftime when their kickers came out to warm back up, you know, they were just kind of cycling balls to him. And he was on the opposite 35, so he was 50, if you will. And, you know, I probably saw him punt 15 balls. And he was consistently parking them on the 10 and the ball would bounce, you know, towards the goal line, there were quite a number of balls that would roll, and on their own, they would stop at the 2 or 3. But you think if there's a coverage team and the ball's bouncing, kind of stands up and then starts to dribble to the end zone, that your coverage team is going to be able to be there to stop that ball. And so he was putting on a clinic. And at one point, I think he just got bored doing that. And he punted a ball, and we had one of our trainers on the other side of the field just kind of working with our guys. And he punted a ball, and it landed a foot in front of the punter and then bounced back and hit our trainer or manager, whatever it is, kind of in the gut. And I was like, man, that son of a gun did that on purpose. And he just has a leg talent that I thought was pretty incredible. And so I just want to give hats off to Brad Wing. I wish we had, you know, a punter like that. That is pretty freaking dynamic.
I did not expect him to be as good as advertised, and he was even more so. And
he was better than advertised as far as I'm concerned. He's one of the best punters I have ever seen, and I'll write that down. Why don't you take us to game balls? Who you got on offense?
On offense, I guess I would have to give the game ball to – I guess I'd like to give two game balls. I mean, the first game ball I'd like to give would be to Trent Richardson because I think he had a hell of a ball game. I really think we didn't feed him the rock as much as we should have. I mean, whenever we played Florida and Lacy couldn't go, he had 29 carries. Well, he finished the game with 23 carries, you know, almost 200 all-purpose yards.
Yep.
But with Lacy only getting 5 carries and Fowler not being brought in for whatever reason, I just don't think we fed Trent enough. I think we should have fed him a little bit more than we did.
Yeah, it would have been nice to see him get a few more carries and, you know, strategically at a couple points get some more carries. But he did have a workmanlike effort, and, you know, he was doing all he could to kind of take the team on over his shoulders, and I really respect his effort. So I think that's a good pick. Who's your second game ball?
My second one's going to have to be McCullough. I mean, McCullough's been sitting there as the fifth-year senior, and, you know, he was the odd man out, and Steen had kind of won the job at right guard, and then Steen has a concussion, and, you know, Saban's kind of playing it close to the vest about, you know, there's a competition going on an ongoing basis, I think he said. And you and I talked about McCullough in the Tennessee game and how we felt like he brought some different talents. Well, I think he did a hell of a job against LSU's interior guys. I think it was really good having him in the ballgame.
I'm going to play right along those lines. And I thought specifically of pulling out McCullough for all of the reasons that you said. And I guess I'm going to be Tommy a little bit and kind of screw up the mini game ball. And I just want to award it to the offensive line. Barry Jones played hurt. He had to go back to the locker room at one point to get taped back up and came, you know, kind of running back onto the field just in time, you know, as our offense was about to go out. He was playing hurt. You know, McCullough was definitely, you know, hasn't been starting all season. And, you know, he stepped in and played well. And, you know, one of the sacks was, you know, quarterback voluntary. You know, the other was earned. There were a number of times where AJ was just standing around looking for a receiver. And so you give kudos to their coverage, but you also have to give kudos to the offensive line that allowed AJ to have that time. So I just want to give, you know, kind of hats off nod to the big uglies on the inside, because it was a very, very physical game. And I thought they played very well.
Well, and the matchup was supposed to be that we had the edge, right? Offensive line had the edge against their defensive line because we had a little more size, and I do think that was apparent. You have something else you want to add on that?
No, I think that's right on. I think that we hear oftentimes about, oh, our offense is going to be able to just pile drive this team because they're a smaller defensive front. And not as often as you would expect does that play out that way. And, you know, we weren't able to rack up a lot of offensive yards and certainly not rushing yards, but I thought the offensive line played very well. They kept AJ clean for the most part. And Trent did, you know, he was able to bust out some runs. And so I just hats off to the offensive line. Who you got on defense?
You know, I was kind of giving him some shit earlier for that dumbass blocking in the back penalty, because I really wish he would have been a little bit smarter there. But I think Josh Chapman has to get my game ball. There were some other players that filled up the stat sheet a little bit more. I think Mark Barron and Robert Lester had a really good ball game, but, you know, Josh Chapman kind of had his big game last year against LSU, and I think he really came through for us. I think him and Jesse Williams both, but Josh had, you know, he had 4 tackles in there. He had, you know, he contributed in a tackle for loss, and He got his big mitt in there a couple times and tripped up Jordan Jefferson as he was trying to scramble. I think he had a really good day.
No, I respect that. You're giving a game ball to the guy that was going to be a key player on defense. I respect that.
Whatever. Who's your guy?
I'm giving my mini game ball to Dont'a Hightower. You know, he had 7 tackles, and that wasn't a team leader. I think he was, you know, maybe the 3rd leading tackler. But one thing that stood out to me, and, you know, we saw repeatedly, is the shots that he took at Jordan Jefferson. And they weren't chippy, and they weren't, you know, behind the whistle, or they weren't illegal shots. They were just physical. When he's just a second after the throw, he's parking the quarterback. And when he's just a second after the pitch, he's parking the quarterback. Every opportunity that he had within the confines of the rules to park the quarterback, he did it. And so in the post-game interviews, when Jefferson, you know, is out there, oh, it's a physical game, one of the most physical games I've ever played. You know, I just have visions of Hightower putting him on his rear end 5 or 6 times when he otherwise would not have gone down. And so otherwise he might not have thought it was that physical of a game, except for he gets parked by Dont'a a couple of times.
No, that's a good point. I've got one more takeaway that I didn't mention earlier here that I want to mention for a second. And you talked about he was a ball hawk and, you know, he was a ESPN highlight kind of guy, but getting to see Tyrann Mathieu in person as a starter, you know, really haven't watched a whole lot of LSU this year. He's a punk.
Well, and he proved that.
I was very unimpressed. He's just a thug.
Well, and he kind of proved that to some respect. We knew that he wasn't a shutdown corner, and so we knew that we could work on him, and I think we did. But the shot that he took on Dre, I think that was uncalled for. And, you know, it seemed like there could have been a penalty. It seemed like there could have been a little more in that situation because that just seemed out of line. That wasn't a hard physical, just barely, you know, a shade across the line. That was egregious.
It was. What do you think about this next week matchup against the Bulldogs?
Well, I think historically we play Mississippi State very physical. They play us very physical. We have them in Starkville. They're a little down on their luck this year, but they would love nothing more to give us some grief. And so after having just played the physical game that we did, to go into Starkville against a physical Mississippi State game, this is one of these games we've got to strap it on. We got to take this game serious. We can't let one game cost us 2. And so all of that we need to take into account. I think we win. I think we're lethargic. I think it's a very boring and frustrating 24-7 outing.
I'm equally concerned about how we play in Starkville, and I'm even more concerned now because, you know, Barrett Jones, you know, I'm sure he's going to strap it up and he's going to try to go, but obviously with the, you know, season-ending injury to Cyrus, you know, McCullough's getting a lot of work at left tackle, and, you know, I'm sorry, that's just not his position. He's okay out there, but he's really given us a spark at right guard. And I've told you that I thought Steen was our 6th best guy. Well, damn, if McCullough ends up having to go because Barrett can't, and Steen gets to be the guy inside, I think we've now weakened 2 positions. And that definitely concerns me a little bit. I mean, their offense is nothing to write home about. They're not as crappy as LSU, but they're still pretty bad. And I'm not really impressed with the quarterback play that they have with Chris Relf, but, you know, he's not as dynamic as Jefferson. And obviously I think our defense is going to kind of come to play, but I'm with you. I think it's probably going to be something like I definitely don't think we're going to be attempting many damn field goals in this ball game. So I'd like to see maybe a 21-10 type of final score, but it's going to be a much closer game than I would like.
I hope that we can jump on them early. And I'm not suggesting that we will. I'm just hoping. I hope that we can jump on them early so that we can get Jones out of the game, because we have Georgia Southern the week after, and, you know, Jones can completely rest that game. But I think we may need him. You know, if we can jump out on him 10 points early, then we may sit out Barrett.
Before we kind of wrap up, I think we probably should at least take a minute and talk a little bit about how things kind of unfolded in the BCS rankings after this unfortunate loss. I was a little surprised that we were ranked ahead of Stanford at 3, and I listened to a couple of analysts talk about this, and they were talking about the significant gap between us and both Boise and the one loss teams. And the point they were trying to make is with the wide gap in the BCS computer numbers, that numerically, it almost seemed like it was a foregone conclusion that as long as these other two undefeateds or two of the three remaining undefeated, not counting Boise, was to lose, then there's an outside chance that there might be a rematch.
I agree. I'm completely surprised that we only dropped from 2 to 3 in the BCS rankings. And so that really bodes well. I think that Oklahoma has to beat Oklahoma State, and that becomes a tougher prospect with the loss of Art Briles. But I think they have a chance to do that. And, you know, Texas Tech is one of those teams you don't really know what you're going to get with them. But they knocked off Oklahoma, and I'm sure they'd love to bookend that with a win over Oklahoma State. So State there has a couple of tough opponents. Oregon squares off against Stanford this week, and then Stanford, beyond that, still has a game with Notre Dame. So they have a couple losable games as well. I think we need to keep our eyes glued this week, not only on the Bama game, but the outcome of the Stanford and Oregon game. I think if they play close and Stanford wins, but they play close, there's an opportunity for some of the voters to start to think, well, LSU smashed up Oregon pretty good, and Stanford could just barely beat Oregon. And so when I have to do my mental pecking order, and it's unfair to use that transitive logic if you're Stanford, but that's not going to prevent it from happening in the minds of the voters. There's going to be some logic there that says, I don't want LSU to play another team like Oregon because they stomped them. Let's go back to the one of the best matchups of the best two teams in college football, and let's give that nod to Alabama. So we need some things to happen, but by no stretch of the imagination are we out of this. I hate for that to sound like, you know, kind of sour grapes or, you know, we'll get them next time kind of thinking. I want to see the rematch because I'm an Alabama fan and the stage that represents, I get that. But you know what? As a fan of college football, I want more of that.
I agree. And I wanted to take a minute and talk about that because I was really surprised. I thought we would drop to 5th. I thought we would drop behind the 4 undefeated teams. And so hopefully some of the voters out there, you know, have the same thought process you do about just wanting the best two teams. I still think it's fair to say, and obviously we're biased and that's okay. I don't care. I still think that, you know, in watching that game, you can't come away from that ball game not really thinking that we played a pretty good ball game against LSU and that we had more to do with losing the game than they had winning it. And that's not sour grapes. And so for those that are going to email and say, well, gosh, you're just saying that because you're Alabama. No, go back and look at the game. We had more to do with not executing and really determining the outcome than I think LSU did.
In many respects, and, you know, to be honest, and you and I talked about this, I thought we'd probably fall to 5. And with falling to 5, I did not want to talk about, you know, us still having a chance because that would just sound too homerish, too crimson glasses, if you will. Even if we had fallen to 4, it's not a topic that I would want to put into this podcast. I'd, you know, let's get another week under us and then maybe we take it on. But the fact that we only dropped to 3, I think we had to reference it. And, you know, kind of right here at the end is the right place. You know, we don't control our destiny. We need things to happen, but we need fewer things to happen than, you know, if we had fallen much further in the standings.
Absolutely. I agree.
So, you know, the race isn't over yet. You know, we kind of opened this by calling it a heavyweight championship type fight. And the first thing you hear after a sort of a split decision or late round victory in a price fight is when's the rematch? And so the symmetry and the imagery kind of fits here as well. So we have to take care of our business, and then we need some other things to kind of happen too. So we'll see how that plays out, but that'll add another layer of intrigue, you know, to that part of the discussion. And I have a couple theories that we can get into if that comes about, how I think our rematch might will play out. But
sure,
as it stands now, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Find us on Facebook, find us on iTunes, find us on Twitter, and drop us an email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com to be included on our mailing list. Until next time, roll tide.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Every day. everything with an attitude.
All right.